Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. I hope you're having a wonderful day. You are listening to or watching the Service Business Mastery Podcast. It's a podcast focused on service business owners, technicians, and managers who are considering becoming business owners themselves. Our target with this podcast is to help answer some unasked questions that you may have when it comes to running and operating your business and helping you operate your business more successfully and realistically just generating that bottom line revenue number. We joke a lot about the top line number just being a vanity number. The real number is that bottom line, that net profit, the money you can take home. So
it's good if that number is in the red, right?
Yes.
That's good.
That's your target is to put it in the red.
Put it in the red. Spend as much money as you can.
Julie was telling you that, didn't she?
That's she wife. Was.
She
was.
She's going to murder me. So before we get started really fast, we're going to talk today with Brian Will. He's got a couple of books out. If you've seen the description of this podcast episode, it mentions several things about his books, some things that he's done in the past, and negotiations. And that's his latest book is based on negotiations and sales, how they work together. We're also going to talk a little bit about why most businesses fail. He's got a really cool take on that. And I think that's going to be some interesting topic. And we're going to talk about how do you take leads and make those into sales. We get leads. Josh can send you a gazillion leads, but if you can't convert those into sales, then they're just useless. You're just throwing money at the wall and hoping something sticks, which is what
I don't have. If I don't have that conversation every day, I mean, it's constant. Like, you get leads, you got to turn those into customers. But Brian's going to talk to us a little bit about the psychology of that and how to think about what the customer is thinking about when they call you or when they're doing research on your website or whatever it is. So it's some really interesting stuff.
Yeah. And we were talking a little bit beforehand. I don't like salespeople. That's just me. I have a challenge hiring salespeople because I don't like them. Typically, that's a very blanketed, broad statement. There are people out there that are amazing at sales, and I love them to death. They're not the salesman I'm talking about. That's so we're going to talk a little bit about that. Josh, before we get started with that, though, what's your take on a BLT? You love it?
Dude, it's really funny you asked me that question. I don't know if you plan that or not. I was at Castle Hot Springs in Arizona last week, and their whole thing is like farm to table. All the meals are prepared from their garden.
Yeah.
And the chef had a take on a BLT, which was like a beet with some kind of sauce on it, and then like a carrot bacon.
Really?
I looked at this thing and I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm not eating that.
That 100% proves my point. A BLT is worthless. The most worthless sandwich. I will die on that hill.
Well, this wasn't a sandwich. It was literally like a beet with carrot bacon. So
cool. That's a great story, Josh. Good job.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know. I just derailed the whole thing.
Tell us. That sounds exactly like a regular BLT, like garbage. Tell us about UpFrog, Josh.
Yeah, so we actually hung out with Justin last week. If anyone caught our live podcast from CEO Warrior headquarters, we got to hang out with Justin. It's always a blast to hang out with him and see what he's doing. He's doing a lot of stuff.
Really quick.
Yeah.
Whenever we first got to hanging out that night that you dipped out on us and didn't and just ignored us, I had octopus. That was amazing. Just by the way, I had octopus.
That's because Brittany. Okay, so to be fully transparent, she's not in the room, so I can say this. She hates seafood, so it's her fault we didn't go out to dinner with y'all. And that's why. It's not my fault. I love seafood, but she does not. So we decided to not eat it all with you.
Okay.
That was the only reason. Yeah.
Right. Yes. It had nothing to do with me being there.
Or Justin. No, UpFrog's great. They most people that have watched the show, they know that they focus on online pricing through Facebook ads and upfront online pricing, that is. So not the old way of having a salesman come in, not giving you a price till the very end. They give you the price up front before they ever step foot in your house. So a completely different way of running the sales cycle, which is going to be interesting because we're going to talk a little bit about that process with Brian. But UpFrog, great people. They're always working on something. They are smart as hell.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, they are very smart. They have some really cool stuff coming out that I can't talk about. I'm super excited about that. But Sarah, I want to talk about Sarah next. And Billy and the team at Sarah is amazing. We're onboarding. We're actually going live with Sarah, I think, next week. So far, amazing. We've every time I've had questions, it's definitely been, they answer it instantly. And the onboarding process is this by far the smoothest process that I've ever experienced as far as onboarding goes. And so Sarah's a CRM platform, for those of you who don't know. So they can, store all your customers' information, send it out. It's very simple. If it's complicated or difficult to do, it's not in that program. That's what I love about it. It's just very simple to use.
And they just finished up a Series B round of funding, which was ironic. So it's very interesting because a lot of times when you see these funding things with big software companies, it's like, it's all these guys out in California, these investment companies. This was mostly around done by contractors, which is a very interesting take on what's going on. So contractors believe in the product and they're pushing their own money into the software.
That says a lot about it. Next, I'd like to talk about Emerson. And they just got purchased out by another company. And they I'm allowed to announce it now. We've known it since like January, but we couldn't say anything. They have amazing partnerships with local tech schools. If you want to talk with a tech school, or if you want more training in your tech school, just reach out to them and they will definitely help your tech school out, whether it's with training resources or teaching the teachers.
Yeah, their goal is really to help get people back into the trades. So we've gone away from that in the high school side of things, but they're really focused on getting people back into the trades and giving you the right resources to help facilitate that in your local community.
Absolutely. And Company Cam, you want to talk Company Cam? We use it. It's great. It's an amazing platform.
Here's the thing. Like, so as a digital marketing company, we have our own DAM system, digital asset management. That's what Company Cam is. But Company Cam was specifically built for people in the trades. Ours is more for a digital marketing side of things. Company Cam can do all that stuff in a lot more.
Extremely expensive versus what Company Cam
the does. The DAM systems that we use are very expensive. Company Cam is like $20 a month per user or something. It's just like, it's stupid cheap for what you get. And they have a lot of really cool features. And honestly, no matter what software you're on, a CRM, most likely your photos, you don't manage them very well. Just I've used all the platforms. Tersh has used them all. Like, they don't have good photo storage or video storage and being able to leverage that stuff. And Company Cam does a great job of being able to repurpose that content in a whole bunch of avenues. So that way you guys can make your digital marketing work a little bit smarter.
Yep. Absolutely. Cool. Josh, you ready to get talking about sales and how we can make it not suck?
Let's do it.
Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that seven-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Hey, welcome, Brian.
Tersh and Josh, thanks for having me, guys. You guys are hilarious, man.
Absolutely. We're honored to have you. I'm honored to talk to you. I'm excited to talk to you about making sales not suck, because, you know, we've had our fair share of sucky sales.
Hey, I need to start off by saying I don't like BLTs either.
So yes.
Yeah. Jump on the bandwagon.
Another Georgia boy.
Sorry, Ron. Ron Davis was commenting. He thinks it's the best sandwich ever, but he's wrong. Awesome. So, Brian, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself for those that don't know who you are?
Yeah. So the quicken on me, and we'll start with, failed out of high school at 16, went in the military, got off active duty. First company I started was landscaping, started with a lawnmower, weed eater, and a blower, built that into seven franchises. That one did really well until it didn't. And that company collapsed, learned a ton off of that one. Went into the insurance industry, built an insurance agency doing direct to consumer, sold that to a venture capital firm, started another insurance company, sold that to another venture capital firm. Then I went into online marketing, sold that to a private equity firm, started doing sales and management consulting for Fortune 500 companies, training sales organizations in converting leads, direct to consumer sales type of stuff. Wrote a couple of books on building businesses and doing sales, got into politics. And now I'm on Tersh and Josh's podcast. So I have hit the epitome of my career right here.
You can retire now.
I'm done. Retire. This is it. After this, I'm going to Disney.
There you go. There you go. you mentioned your landscape business did really well until it didn't. What do you mean by that? Like, do you know what caused that?
100%. Biggest lessons I learned in my first business, right? We always say the first business you start probably won't be the last business you have. Yeah. It might not even be the successful business you've got, but you will learn a lot in the first one. And I made two critical errors in my first business. Number one, 90% of my business came from one contractor. Ooh. Okay. And I see this a lot with young entrepreneurs. They get a business, they've got one huge client, and they think, I have a business. No, you don't. You're just basically working for somebody. You got a job. And when that company hired a new vice president and he wanted to hire his son to do all the landscaping on the five different projects we were working on, he fired us and we were screwed. Lost a lot of money. The second mistake I made was I was not backing myself up with any type of security. I didn't have cash in the bank. I was spending every dollar I made. It was the first time I'd made money. So I had cars and motorcycles and vacations. And when the check stopped, not only did I lose my house and my cars and my business, I bounced 130 checks that month because I couldn't pay my bills and the bank didn't want to do business with me anymore. And here I am 29 years old and I'm starting from scratch with a baby with health problems. So
So you did exactly what I said in the intro. You tried to go into the red.
Yeah. Well, by the way,
spend as much as you could.
In case anybody didn't catch that, that was a joke. You're supposed to be in the black, but yes, I went in the red.
Don't fire. Nobody yell at me. I you are not supposed to be in the red. That was a joke. If you couldn't tell,
I guess I should have clarified that.
But that's so true. Cause a lot of times I talk to contractors, especially when they're starting their business out and they have either a home warranty company getting most of their work, or they do like property management. And they're like, oh, we're so busy. We're so swamped, all this stuff. And we got these great accounts. The problem is they don't think about what happens if the rug gets swept from underneath. You know, it's funny, taken right underneath their feet.
You mentioned that, Josh, with our other HVAC company, the one that I don't, it runs itself now. That company, we had about 2,500 properties from one property management company. And it kept us so busy that... That was our thing. We hired like two other ones, we worked for two other ones. We brought them on once we could get some technicians to do the work, and something happened, and that 2,500 property management company just decided to go a different route.
And you know, the challenge is you've still got all the fixed overhead. You've got the truck payments and the office payments, and you're now in big, big trouble.
Yeah. That business was a little weird. We did everything with the cash on hand that we had. So we wouldn't get anything with a payment. We paid cash for the vans. And then, so it just so happened that we kind of seen the writing on the wall. We got some other clients built up and it didn't kill us. But had we just been nose to the grind, just trying to get the work done, it would have ruined our company because for the first 6 months, we relied on those 2,500. Now we have something like 6,500 properties that we manage. And that one property management company came back.
It's just surprising how many times somebody who are generally technicians start a business because they have one client and then they never branch out from that client. And pretty soon they get themselves in trouble.
Yeah. And that's, I see that all too often. And that's a lot of times that's why they're coming to us, because they do realize that's a problem and they want to diversify. They want to get homeowners finding them online, stuff like that. But it can absolutely be a huge problem. It may not feel like a problem because money's coming in and you're busy and all that stuff. But that day it gets swept away. Everything's gone.
Now, I thought I was high on the hog. Yeah. Until I got the phone call. By the way, not only are we firing you, we're not giving you that $150,000 check you're supposed to pick up tomorrow, because we're going to hold it for warranty work. And then you're like, well, I got to pay bills tomorrow, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, no, that's scary stuff. So obviously through your failures, you learned a lot about what to do to be successful. So were those things, those lessons implemented pretty quick when you went into the insurance world?
You know, I say this all the time, Josh, success in any endeavor is a progression. It's a progression of ideas, thoughts, and executions, right? So those first two lessons, you go, oh crap, okay. And here's the thing about success. Success, here's another one I hate, right? People say you have to fail to succeed. Well, that's not really true. You have to learn from the failure to succeed, right? Too many people don't learn from their failures. So I learned two big lessons in that failure. I applied them to the next one. And so we never made those mistakes again. That doesn't mean I never made more mistakes.
I was going to say, you probably made new mistakes. And
yes.
Ideally, the mistakes get smaller as you go. Like,
yes.
They're still big maybe at the time, but it's like, it's not going to kill your business.
That's exactly
right. It's just little things that you need to do to add on. I feel like that's kind of where our business is right now. We've had some growth, and now it's like, we've got to add like a middle management, more of an overhead style thing, directors and stuff like that. And I'm just, it's a new phase for us.
But how does it,
bumping that ceiling.
How does it not get exhausting always having a new problem to deal with?
Yeah. So I love this question, and I'll give you kind of a complicated answer. So I remember when I was young in the business and I was having these same challenges you're talking about. And I went to one of my mentors and I said, man, this and this and this and this. And he said, Brian, this is what you signed up for. This is the heat. You can't take the heat.
I signed up to get rich.
Well, yeah, but this is what you signed up for. If you can't take it, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. You're going to have to go through that or go back to being a solopreneur and don't deal with these things, but then you'll never build anything with intrinsic value, right?
I will tell you,
you can sell.
There are days, just one or two that like just working for myself and doing my own thing and only rely on myself sounds really nice. But then I'm like, well, what happens when I don't want to do this anymore?
Yes.
You mean like the days that end in Y?
I said only one or two. Right, yeah. So,
Brian, I want to ask you one of the first questions I asked you earlier. But why do most businesses fail? It's kind of going into what we're talking about. But let's give you have these five keys here. Yep. Can we give those out and just kind of nail those down?
Yeah. So my first book that was a Wall Street Journal bestseller was called The Dropout Multimillionaire, and that stems from the fact that I failed out of high school. And the subtitle is 37 Business Lessons on How to Succeed with No Money, No Education, and No Clue, because that was me, right? I was the guy starting a business that was working in landscaping and decided to start my own landscaping business, didn't have a clue what I was doing, right? So, and I love your audience, all these guys, if they're looking to go into business, this is exactly right up the alley of what they need to be thinking. And so these five keys I wrote, and I did them for Forbes magazine, and I'll give them to you here. So the first one is, why do you want to go into business? Or even if you have a business and it's not growing the way you want, the question is, why are you doing this? And it's important because, as y'all know, as you said, every day that ends in Y, there are going to be challenges that are huge. There are going to be challenges that you think are overwhelming. There are going to be things that come at you, whether it's employees or the government or the state or contracts or customers. There are going to be really, really bad days. And if you don't understand why you're doing this, you're probably not going to make it because you'll not have the intestinal fortitude to push through it. So I always ask people, why are you doing this? Number two, whatever business you're starting, why should anybody buy it from you? Right? In other words, if you're starting another HVAC company or landscaping or whatever, there's a dozen of those in town. What makes you unique? Why should anybody buy from you and why should they buy your product? And if you can't come up with a valid reason why people should buy from you, then you're probably never going to scale your business because if you can't figure it out, neither can anybody else. So why should they buy from you?
When that book that you referenced in this article, I know a lot of people struggle with that. I see these posts on groups like where people start talking about this stuff and people say things and it's like, it's all the same thing.
Yep.
You know, we're fast. We answer the phone 24/7. It's all like, there's certain things that customers expect.
Yeah.
And then there are other things that like actually are differentiators. How would you describe that to people where they can actually be like, that is a USP, like it actually is unique to you.
So the example I use in the book, and this is true, I had a guy that was working for me while I was an interim CEO of a company out in Portland. And he called me, started his own business. And he said, hey, Brian, I need that slick line to get in the door to get past the gatekeeper. And I was like, well, tell me what's unique about you. Why should they buy from you? That's my question. Why should they buy from you? He goes, well, because I give great customer service. I said, yeah, so does their uncle's nephew.
Yeah.
He said, well, I care about their employees. I said, so what? Nobody cares. They don't believe you anyway. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, what is it? I said, I have no idea. You have to tell me why they should buy from you. And when you figure that out, you call me back and we'll figure out what you should say to that gatekeeper. Well, the magic in what I just said is that if you figure out why, you don't need me to give you a line because you now know why you're unique. And that's not something you might be able to figure out in a minute or 2 minutes or 5 minutes. It might take you collaborating with your friends or your coach or your mentor. Or look, you're going to have to figure that out. And when you figure it out, that's what you're going to run with. Until you figure it out, you're just a dime a dozen.
Do you have any way to figure it out? Like, so there's a lot of things that we do different and we're different the way we differentiate ourselves from others. But there are other times when I'm thinking about things with other businesses and I'm like, why? I don't really know how we're different.
And that's a challenge, right? So I'll give you an example. I built this restaurant about a quarter of a mile from me. Mm-hmm. And we built it in this mixed use development. And the reason I did it was because when I went in there prior to building the restaurant, nobody served draft beer. I know that's a crazy thing, but they all serve craft. There was no place to watch TV on when sports were on. And the places that did have a TV wouldn't play the actual game. And I thought, if I put a sports bar here and I play the actual games and I serve draft beer, that's what's unique about my bar. And now we have the most popular bar in my hometown area because everybody knows if they want to watch the game and they want to drink draft beer and sit in really super comfortable chairs, not chairs that suck. You ever been to a bar and the chair's so uncomfortable you're just
It's like they're trying to get rid of you.
It's called form over function, right? Yeah. So you have the most comfortable chairs with the big 60-inch TVs with the game playing and you've got cheap beer and people will sit there for 4 hours in your bar and drink, right? That's what's unique about that bar. You got to look at everything you do. What's unique? Like my mastermind, I am tactical in nature. When you come to me for coaching, I'm not worried about your psyche. I'm not worried about your personal relationships. We're going to talk about the numbers in your business and how we fix that and make your business grow. That's what makes my mastermind unique, right? So you got to figure that out for yourself. And
So what happens if, like we talked about this earlier, you're a technician and you want to become a CEO. Yes. So you start your own business.
Yep.
And you're plugging along because your aunt and uncle have given you business and given you referrals. Yep. Your grandma gave you referrals and gave you the best review on Facebook.
Yep.
But other than that, you're not any different than anyone else.
Right. And you're probably never going to grow and scale. Business is extremely fragile.
How do we change that?
So this is one of our other lessons, right? The question is, who are you in the business? And more importantly, who are you not? And that's where you have to check your ego, right? Maybe have a discussion with a coach or a mentor and say, I'm the technician. I worked for this company for 10 years. I call it Joe the Plumber. And I've been a great plumber and they bill me out at $150 an hour. They're only paying me 50. I'm going to start my own business and keep all the money. Mm-hmm. So Joe starts his business. I call it Joe's Plumbing now. And I always tell people, if Joe's business is going to fail, it's not because Joe doesn't know how to plumb. It's because Joe doesn't know how to run a business.
Yeah.
Right. And absolutely. Joe's got it. If Joe has an ego problem, he says, no, I'm the entrepreneur. I'm the CEO. Well, guess what? Maybe you're not Joe. Maybe you're the technician. You can be a little entrepreneur and be a technician, but you're not the CEO. You're not the person who's going to manage the details. You're not the person who's going to go sell the projects. You need to do what you're good at. And if you can be honest with yourself about who you are and who you're not, then you backfill your weakness with people who are good at what they do. If you have an organization of any size, you're going to find a CEO, a good salesperson, a good technician. You're going to find a good manager. You're going to find different personalities that handle different parts of the business. Personally, I'm a terrible manager. Don't ask me details. Don't ask me to get in and dig through paperwork or fill. I will fail miserably and I'm okay with that. I'm an entrepreneur. I sit at 30,000 feet, right? I make strategic command and control decisions and have other people that do everything else. And that's why we're successful. So if you're starting your business, who are you and who are you not? Check your ego, bring other people in to help you.
So based on that, we go into starting our own business. A lot of times people quit on Friday and start their business on Monday. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily having like 6 months worth of money saved, mm-hmm. and stuff, things like that. So you may struggle through it for the first year of wearing all the hats. And say you are the technician and you even have a hint of entrepreneurship, but you are absolutely not a manager, but you now you need to bring somebody in that you need to manage.
Yep.
How do you recommend someone do something like that? Like I'm not a salesman. So when I come, when I bring a salesman in, I don't know how to coach a salesman.
Right. So there's two parts to this question. The first question is, do you want to be a solopreneur? Do you want to be self-employed? Do you just want to be Joe and you do plumbing jobs? And if that's what you want, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. If and however you want to build a business that has an organization, it's got process procedures, you're going to build intrinsic value. It's something you can sell. If you want to build a business, that's a completely different thing. Another mistake I see young entrepreneurs make is they start their business, as you just said, they're wearing all the hats. That's okay. First of all, we know they can never scale because you can't do everything. But what they do, and this is what I did in my first business, is they start spending all the money, right? They jack their lifestyle up to the revenue level they've got, and they never put themselves in a position to be able to hire the salesperson or the CEO or the manager. And that's a critical error. You need to keep your lifestyle as low as you possibly can if your intent is to grow a business. And every time you have extra money, replace yourself within the organization with somebody else who's good at what you're not. Sometimes that's taken in a partner if you can't afford to do it, right? Maybe you should bring in a partner who's a CEO. I will tell you, I've made more money with partners than I ever made on my own because we had multiple people doing different things.
That's such a challenging conversation in our world. It's so often that we hear horror stories about partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that you've made the most money. I know other people who have immensely benefited by bringing on a partner or being the partner. How do you find success with it when there's so many people who fail at it?
So partnerships can be a couple different ways, and partnerships should all, I'm going to get technical here. They should be all managed under an operating agreement. Okay. So people that tend to fail with partners fail to set up the operating agreement properly. They fail to silo the responsibilities and they fail to limit the liabilities within that operating agreement that those partners can or cannot do. Again, this is where you need a good coach or mentor to come in and show you how to set this up.
Yeah, the other way you can do, like, sorry, these sound like conversations. Like if partnership, or that sounds interesting to you because you know maybe you suck at the software or the marketing, the sales side, like you're good at plumbing, but you're not good at this stuff or whatever that looks like. You need to talk to someone who's been there before you just decide to go like do a handshake agreement.
Yep.
And now you end up losing your ass at some point because something happens and you didn't have it dialed in with a legal binding agreement.
Here's my famous saying. This came from my senior partner. We write contracts and operating agreements when we're friends so that we can enforce them when we're not.
Mm.
Right.
And do you find that when you are friends, your operating agreements and contracts are too lenient because you're...
That's why you use a good lawyer to give everybody good legal advice as to the ups and downs, the dangers, the traps. Now, I'll tell you this. There's another option here. That was option one. Option two is you can take a partner on without giving them any equity in your company. These are called profit interest partners, right? I can bring you on, Josh, and say, hey, man, let's be a partner. I have control of the company. You're going to come in. I'm going to give you 40% profits interest in my company. Okay. So you're going to entitle to that as long as you're a partner, but just understand that I still run the company and I can fire you if you do anything out of control or you do something for calls or you cause a problem. So I can still have you as a partner without giving you that.
If they get fired, do they lose the equity?
Depends on the operating agreement.
Okay.
And the answer to generally on a profits interest is yes. You're only getting paid as long as you're here.
Gotcha. Sure.
And I do that a lot with young businesses because you don't want to bring somebody in and let them just ride your coattails and do nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, in my personal experience with this company, one of the best things that we ever did. So I'm definitely more, I've done tests with EOS and stuff. I'm definitely more the visionary, not the integrator role. And we hired a operations manager who is very much the opposite of me, very much integrator, not visionary. And literally, we have documented so many different SOPs and stuff since that time.
Mm-hmm.
And she hasn't even been here a year yet, and we've doubled in size. And it's been, mm-hmm. she like it's just way more structured. Like I would, if I woke up one day and I'm like, I want to change this because we have a problem, I'm just going to go change it.
Right.
She's like, well, you got to think about this and then this.
She's the manager. Like, you're the entrepreneur. That's the difference.
She finds the gaps that I don't see because I'm just like, this is a problem. I'm a problem fixer. I'm going to go fix it.
Yeah. I talk about this in the book. Yeah. One of the examples I use is salespeople and managers always fight. And the manager is always coming and saying, the salesperson did this and they did this and they didn't do it exactly the way I wanted it. And my answer is, Mr. Manager, if the salesperson did everything exactly the way they were supposed to do it, what would you do? And you'd be like, well, I wouldn't have anything to do. Well, then I wouldn't need you. So think about that for a second.
What? So as far as, so thinking about this, where let's say somebody doesn't want to give up equity in their company and they're thinking about, mm-hmm. I do want to hire someone because I know I'm not good at certain things. Is it ever too early to do that? I mean, obviously you got to pay them a salary, but is it ever too
early? I've heard of people bringing controllers on like within the first 6 months of being in business.
So repeat the question. I'm not sure I understood the question. Is it too early to bring on a partner?
Is it ever too early? No, well, even just an employee, someone that's totally opposite of you, like a controller.
No, it's never too early if you can afford it. I would tell you to quit spending the money on yourself and spend the money on the business. The business is the most important thing, right? You need to live at the very least amount of income level that you can live on until that business can support you and the organization you need to build so that it will give you the lifestyle you ultimately want. Don't think short term, think long term. How much money do you want to make next year? 200 grand? Well, you can only make 50 by yourself. So why don't you live on 20 now and we'll build an organization that'll pay you 200 next year. If you need to make 50 now, then you're never going to make more than 50, right? We got to get out of the short-term thinking. And it goes back to the question, what do you want? And I will show you how to get that.
Talk about having forethought, like not just putting out fires.
And I feel like that's where, especially heating, air conditioning, plumbing, you get a lot of fires. Stuff like right now, it's hot out. I talked to a guy this morning doing a second sales call with him and he's in his truck. Like
I wish it would get hot outside.
It hasn't been as hot as it normally is. At least it's been the last couple of years. But that's why I feel like that forethought isn't there a lot of times. Cause we're so worried about what we're doing in the next 5 minutes that the next 5 months or 5 years, like we'll deal with that when we get there. Right.
See, you're talking to a technician.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs think a year from now, 6 months from now, 3 months from now. So if you're telling me you're talking to somebody who's more worried about what they're doing right now, then they tend to be a technician and not the entrepreneurial command and control visionary of that company. So if there isn't a visionary in that company, then you as a coach or mentor need to be that person and hopefully they're going to listen to you.
Okay. Go ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, I think that's an important point for everyone. Because if you're listening to this and that does fit you and you're like, you're always putting out the next fire and not thinking down the line, you either need to think about bringing someone in that has that forethought or you need to figure out a way to get away for a couple of days and start thinking through that. Because you'll never get there.
Is it possible to change from the technician to the entrepreneur?
Sure. I think so. I mean,
I think
they are definitely different personalities for sure. But technicians can become entrepreneurs. I started out, digking holes and mowing grass. And then I went to selling, and then I went to managing, and now I run companies. So, yeah.
And I know we didn't get to it because we got stuck on your second point of five. But your last point. Actually, let's go through that real quick before we
change. Well, that's what I was getting ready to do. I have number one, why do you want to be in business? Number two, why should someone buy from you?
We talked about that. Yep.
Number three, who are you in the business and who
are you not? This is what we've been talking about. Yep.
And, number four
is if you are launching a business and you've never run a successful company before, or if you have a business and it's not scaling the way you want, you need to check your ego and understand that you don't know what you're doing. Okay. You just don't. And if you can check your ego and admit to yourself that you don't know how to do this, then you need to go find a coach or a mentor who is 10 to 20 steps ahead of you. You don't need to read Elon Musk's book. You don't need to read Bill Gates' book. They can't help you. They think at a level that is not relevant to you. Find somebody who has owned a successful business 10 or 20 steps ahead of you. And it doesn't even matter what industry. If you're an HVAC, you don't need an HVAC guy. You need a business guy, right? Find somebody 10 or 20 steps ahead of you. hire a mentor, hire a coach, vet their background. That's super important. Make sure they know what they're talking about. And then take them on and listen to them and let them help you change your filter, change your thinking process, show you the mistakes you're going to make. I always tell people, when you're starting out, I call it the 100 steps to success. Wherever you are and wherever you want to be, there are 100 lessons, right? Are going to 100 failures. Now, some people start at 20, some people start at 50. If you've got venture capital and parents that are going to help you and a board of directors, you might start at 50 or 60. But if you're just starting out because you used to be Joe and now you want to start Joe's Plumbing, there are probably 100 things you need to learn between you and success at the level you want. You're going to have to go through them. You can succeed as long as you don't quit. I got that from Dave Metzler. As long as you don't quit and you learn the lessons you need to learn, right? Keep learning. So,
Is there a coach that's too far ahead?
Yes. Quit taking the advice of billionaires. I say that all the time, right? I was listening to them like, oh, I just read Elon Musk's latest book and he said this and this. Look, I just listened to a speech that Richard Branson did about a couple months ago, right? And in the speech, he goes, you don't need to worry about numbers. Don't worry about accounting. People are going to handle that for you. I'm only concentrating on 80,000 feet. And I'm thinking that's the worst possible advice you can give a young entrepreneur. Don't worry about the numbers because you'll end up in the red, just like you talked about at the beginning.
Yes.
You can't take advice from Richard Branson. Y'all don't think the same. That's just a fact, right? Elon Musk, when he's trying to drive from LA to San Francisco, doesn't figure out when traffic is going to be heavy. He fucking digs a tunnel.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And drives underground.
Or just takes his jet.
I mean, he takes a jet. We don't think the same. So don't take advice from people who are so far ahead that they can't relate to you. So that's very, very, very important. And then the last one is, and this gets back to what I just said, you better know your numbers. You'd be shocked at how many young entrepreneurs, and I don't mean by age, I mean we call it 0 to 10 million in revenue. When I go in and say, give me a set of P&Ls month over month for 24 months, side by side in Excel spreadsheet. And they go, well, I don't have anything like that. Like, well, how do you know what you're doing? How do you have any clue what you're doing, how you're doing, or what's going to happen next? If you don't know those numbers, you're basically just, you're going to fail. You just pack it in. Okay.
Brian,
you've got to know your numbers.
We're only supposed to review those once a year, right?
No, I get them every Thursday. I get them every Thursday. It's my 5 KPIs. I know what my KPIs are. I get them every Thursday. They're within a range and a percentage basis. And I know that I don't have to look at a full set of financials. I need to look at 5 percentages, 28, 24, 21, and 10, right? I look at those percentages. And if a percentage is off, then we dig into it and find out what's wrong. If the percentage is in, then I know I'm good. I'm clean. I'm making money. Everything's good. Right
now, the KPIs that you check every Thursday, are those, could those be used across the like other industries, like our industries, or is it
like I did one for a franchise company in Nashville? They had a big franchise show last August, and we did it for the cleaning company. And I said, send me 5 set of financials: 2 of your top, 2 of your bottom, and 2 in the middle. And I did a comparison. We call this a reverse P&L analysis using pattern recognition. I built the 5, there were 6 KPIs. And I said, the only difference between the top guy and the bottom person was the amount of money they spent on marketing. The top guys are spending 8. The bottom people are spending 3. Bottom people are losing money. The top guys were growing by hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. I can prove that through your reverse P&L analysis by watching the trends and tell you that what you're doing today, if you let me do this properly, I can predict what's going to happen in your business. So, but that's different for everybody, right? Look at a business, drill it down, find the KPIs, figure out what they're supposed to be in a perfect business. And that's the target. And if you just manage those few numbers as an entrepreneur, you don't have to be an accountant. You just got to know what those numbers are supposed to be.
Yeah, that's great. That's
okay. So let me ask you on negotiations, and that's your latest book. So how do we take those leads that Josh is getting us and we make those into a sale? We convert those to sales.
Yep. So we call this, and everybody's heard this, right? We call this overcoming objections, right? Everybody's heard that, but I take it a step further. We need to teach you how to overcome objections before the client has them. Because if you can overcome the objection before the client even has it, then you take away all their ability to walk away from the sale. Okay. And I teach this, and it's a 2-day course, but the very first objection you need to understand, and by the way, y'all already hit it, people don't like salespeople.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Josh and Tersh, it's not that they don't like you. You probably coach baseball on the weekends and you have parties at your house and you're a great guy. But when you put on your salesperson hat, people no longer like you because they are afraid of you. Mm-hmm. And they are afraid of two things. Number one, they're afraid of being sold. Nobody wants to be sold. I don't want to buy something I didn't want. I don't want to buy something for more than it cost. And if you're a salesperson, you're never going to give me the best price. You're not looking out for my best interests. And therefore, you're going to try to sell me something. Number two, they're afraid of the unknown. Every time you walk into a sales situation, we talked about this before the show, and you're talking about auto dealerships, you don't know what's going to happen next, right? Is he going to walk over and talk to the guy that's like a 10-foot tall booth over there and overlooks the whole dealership? Yeah. You know, I don't know. So if we understand that people don't like salespeople because they are afraid of them, because they don't want to be sold, and because they are afraid of the unknown, then the very first thing we need to do from the second we say hello to a customer is start to bring down that wall of mistrust and calm them down using sedative statements and positive affirmation, right? And this is an easy one. So I'll give you this. This is how we do it. If somebody calls you about a lead that was generated online, let's say that you called me, Josh, and you said, hey, I'm interested in, you know, potentially looking at an HVA system. I'd say, all right, Josh, here's what we need to do. I need to ask you some questions. And based on your answers, if I feel like my product fits with what you're looking for, I will make a recommendation. I'll run over some different pricing with you. And then I'm going to let you decide if that's something you want to do. Now, is that fair enough?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because what I've done is I've said, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen next. I'm going to ask you questions. I'm going to make a recommendation. I'm going to let you decide. Okay, so I'm not going to try and sell you. You get to decide. I'm telling you what's going to happen, so there is no unknown. And then I use my first positive statement. I say, hey, is that fair enough? And your answer is, well, yeah. Okay, yeah. And I say, all right. And now I go into what we call this the fact-finding phase, and we start going through this whole psychology thing of how people think and the way you should ask questions. And please don't listen to a lot of these online sales gurus because they're going to get you in trouble. Well, and it's really all about making a connection.
All you got to do is say what they say, and apparently you're a millionaire.
Yeah, the mirror technique. That one drives me crazy. I think you said it earlier, said if somebody tries that, about the first second time they do that to me, I'm hanging up on them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. That's terse.
That's okay.
I don't have that patience.
Exactly. I gave this example. This guy was teaching yesterday, and he goes, answer a question with a question. If they ask you what your favorite color is, say, that's a good question. Why do you ask? I'm going to say, because I want to know what your favorite color is. What's your favorite color? Right? It's a dumb question. Answering a question with a question, just have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, it feels less like you're trying to guide the conversation whenever you're having a real conversation.
Don't be cheesy. I hate cheesy salespeople.
Cool, Brian. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. Is there anything that we forgot to ask you? Or actually, can we share about your classes that you have coming up?
Yeah, so my website is www.brianwillmedia.com. And my podcast is on there. My previous guests, my books are on there. We do one-on-one and corporate coaching. We also run a mastermind for entrepreneurs. I've got a live class coming up in July, which is going to be a one-day master sales course in sales and negotiation. It's based on the book. That one little tip I gave you is like step one of a two-day process. There's a whole lot of psychology that goes into sales. So we've got some online courses coming out in sales and negotiation. So anything you want to know, you can get right there on my website. I appreciate you letting me plug that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And what's the name of your podcast?
It's now called The Force Multiplier. So I've done a rebrand just this week, believe it or not. It used to be called The Dropout Multimillionaire. That was my first book. Now that the second books came out, we're rebranding it to The Force Multiplier.
Okay. Awesome. We'll definitely share that stuff with our audience. It's been a great conversation. Very easy.
For I enjoyed it.
This was great. So if you guys are interested in any of that stuff, check out Brian's website. Check out the podcast. Did all the episodes transfer over? Or did you have to create like a new thing just in case they want to go back and listen to any old episodes?
Everything's on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. So Everything that's on the YouTube channel is also on the website. So you can, if you go to the Dropout MM on YouTube or just look out the Dropout Multimillionaire or the Force Multiplier, or just go to my website. That's the easiest place, but everything's on the website.
Okay. Awesome. Cool, man. We really appreciate hanging out with you.
Yeah, this has been awesome, guys. Thanks.
We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.